We would really love your input about if you think it's at the right level, the wrong level, if it can, has too much information, not enough information, etc.
Okay, great. It's exciting. Thank you, everybody, for doing that. How great.
All right. Let's see. Let's see who's on the call. I am Charnas. Thomas. Jennifer. Bill Barnett.
Yes.
Ben Jones is not going to be on. Kathy Sulik.
She's not here, but this is Shauna. I'm here.
Hi, Shauna. Elizabeth Sal.
Here.
I'm sorry, Elizabeth. Is that you?
Here. Present.
Okay.
Raising my hand.
Jeff Wozniak.
I'm here.
Sarah.
Here.
You're very low. Tina.
Here.
Tatiana.
Yep.
Peter's here. Deepak. Johan, Tom Donaldson's here, Kathy's here, Faye's here, John Hannigan's here, Anna Kinney, Dan Savage, Susan Tapert, Dale Harold,
yo,
Bill Dunty,
here,
and Jill. All right. Is Jen back on yet?
Can you not hear me?
I can hardly hear you. Can you say it again?
Can you hear me better now?
Yes. Okay. All right. All right. So today we have a number of presents I want to get to, so I'm going to try to keep them. First of all, I do want to mention that if anyone's interested in contributing to that Tim Cudd's scholarship, please send us a check, or I guess you could send it directly there, but let me know. If you want to pool them together for a CFAS contribution, send them here and we'll put them together and send out one check. If you want to send it on your own, then you're free, certainly free to do that. But I just wanted to remind you of that. I got the latest central repository data today, this morning, and unfortunately no additional data have been added to the central repository in the last month, so from any project, so I'm hoping that that will soon be rectified. Is anyone testing any subjects?
This is Sarah. We have not started testing for phase three. We're actively training and developing the procedures, and we're hoping we talked about last time, we're planning on having everyone start by December 1st.
And were there any subjects that still needed to go through phase two?
I can only speak for San Diego. Well, San Diego and Atlanta have subjects that are going to be tested for phase two. We did add some subjects. Those probably haven't been entered in the central repository yet, and we also have some other subjects we're trying, very actively to get, but have had difficulty getting them to come in. And I know the last time I talked to Julie about it, they were still working on a few.
So has anyone recruited any new subjects? Because Ken hasn't seen any new subjects since May, I believe.
And in L.A., we have a waiting list of, I want to say, about 13 exposed kids. So potentially have Ken see them before we actually do testing, if we can organize something like that.
Okay. So they're waiting for phase three or for phase two?
Phase three.
All righty. Any other comments on that? Oh. All right. So what we want to do today is to try to present some slides. As all of you know, we have a new partner in CFAS, and that's NOFAS, with Tom Donaldson and Kathy Mitchell. And they are present CFest to the general public and to the greater audience and try to reach people that we wouldn't normally reach in our scientific presentations. Now, these are geared toward more knowledgeable but lay individuals, and so we've going to go through the slides that everyone's prepared, and Kathy and Tom hopefully can, and others can make some. We have about seven to go through today, so I want to start with the core, and then we'll go into the individual projects, and then we'll come back to the other cores, because I think the major emphasis to get out is what are our research findings, or so that they have things to talk about the importance of CFAS. So, Jill, if you can turn to my screen, that would be great. And let me, so can everyone see that?
See what?
See what?
I see the slide. It's just text right now.
Jill?
Yes. So under the Quick Start tab, you just need to click Share My Desktop.
Oh, I need to do that. All right.
Yeah.
There's a Quick Start tab. Share My Desktop.
Yep. And that's what everyone wants to do once they're clicked.
Don't have any case of it.
So we stay on the Whiteboard tab on our computers?
Oh. Nope. It's going to open up.
Okay.
I see it.
I see it.
I have it now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. All right, so, you know, this is basically the first slide. I think my changes would be that to increase the size of the collaborative initiative on fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. But basically, you can read the slide. It kind of gives our purpose. And then the notes below it explaining kind of more in detail about what we do. And certainly the formatting of the slide or the background can be changed so that they're all the same, but that's something that I think Jennifer's going to undertake. And but just comments about whether you think it tells what we want to do, if you, or any comments, criticisms, et cetera.
Ed, this is Dale. So to me, diagnostic schema seems kind of technical. I wonder if something could be more just straightforward, like new diagnostic approaches or develop new technologies.
How about simply develop ways to diagnose?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that kind of.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good.
All right.
You want to put develop before ways, or?
Or even say develop better ways to diagnose the full range.
All right.
Kathy
and Tom?
Ed, I don't know if you want to do it here, but I wonder if you should move that whole CFAS panel up to the top center and have all the small illustrations bracketed on the side and below.
Yeah, I'm probably more interested in content right now, and then because
yeah, but I mean just as a visual when later. Right. There's a different suggestion for later.
All right. And but I only want to spend like about 5-10 minutes on each of these. So, any other?
I would say after effects, you say effects of alcohol during pregnancy. I don't think a lot of people know what gestational means.
Kathy, Tom, what are your comments?
Yeah,
I agree.
Guess
go ahead.
Depending on, you know, yeah, that's probably a smart way to go. I guess I am struggling a little bit with is it develop better ways to diagnose? Or is it, are we trying to recognize the full range of effects that can occur. So I don't know. That's just a question.
I think it should be recognize or identify.
Yeah.
Recognize and diagnose.
Or detect.
Detect.
Or maybe. Right.
Because I think diagnose has a whole other.
Right. I do too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, a meaning, not actually another meaning.
All right, the full range of effects from gestational exposure to large or moderate amounts of alcohol, and this should be range of effects from prenatal.
What about maternal drinking during pregnancy?
Kathy?
I think prenatal exposure might be better.
All right. Next, and we can modify. I just want to know if we're on the right track.
Okay.
So provide cross-cultural assessment of FASD. Yada yada yada.
Well, sites and samples seems again kind of at a technical level that a layperson probably wouldn't be thinking along the lines of.
But if you just say assessment across cultures rather than cross-cultural and not include that whole across sites and samples.
Right. Populations would be okay.
Yeah, maybe population.
Populations is clear.
All right.
And take out the cross-cultural at the in the first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to use populations or if you want to include the word culture, you could say populations or cultures at the next where
about
you have populations.
Diverse populations.
Yeah.
Taking out cross-cultural, provide assessment of FASD.
I think since knowing what is similar or different looks awkward in there, what about provide assessment of FASD across diverse populations, and
yeah.
Then we have to fix the rest of the sentence. But I wonder if that just flows a little better.
Are there certain terms we should be key to? You know, I was thinking of prenatal. Does prenatal, you know, ring some kind of legislative bell for an aid that, you know, is a term we either do or do not want to make sure that we use?
I think it's a term that you do want to use.
Okay. It just seems like there might be terms you might want to make sure we refer to because they have meaning for legislators or their aides that we may not know.
How's that? Quick, easy. All right, let's move on to the next one, our overall goals. This is what we presented at.
Too many words.
Huh? I'm sorry, someone said something, I didn't hear it.
No, I said too many words. This is Faye Calhoun. There's no staff is going to be, nobody's going to read it.
All right. I don't know, how can you put in notes?
We'll put it on two slides.
Okay.
No, well, I don't want to give them too many slides either, so.
Spell a term there.
You don't need the second sentence.
Mm-mm. I agree.
Very technical.
All right. And this is our framework. That and the, hopefully the notes explain it. So what we're trying to do. Any comments?
Great. I think it's very clear.
It's Michael, Ed. I just put a little comma after environment.
Where? Oh, here.
Environment, genetics.
All right.
Flash or an ampersand.
In the dose timing pattern, genetics, age, and nutrition box, do we need to clarify that with another word or two that indicates that these are factors that affect outcome?
I think it comes out in the
okay. Okay.
But it would be presented. And then my final slide is just simply so that they could find out where they could get additional information about CFAST. So is it something to start working with, Kathy and Tom?
I think it's great, yeah.
All right.
Agreed.
Yeah, wonderful. Right. Thank you.
We have any volunteers for a project that would like to go?
I'll go.
Or I can go, either way.
Elizabeth, you said it first. You're on. So you have to. I have to unshare mine.
And I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
I don't know what I have to do to get out of it.
Hold on, I'll fix you. Okay, so we're switching to Dr. Sala?
Yes.
Here we go. So on, again, under the quick start, you just want to click share your desktop.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
It's coming up. It says it's going to do it.
I got it.
Okay.
I have a black screen.
Yep. I see it.
I have it.
Okay, hold on. All right, I got it.
I don't have it.
And do you have it? Should I go?
I don't, but you go and I'll find out what's going on, or I'll go next door and see it on Jill's.
Okay. So essentially, this is just kind of a title slide, which.
Hello?
Basically, the work, you know, my part of this consortium is to help understand the impact of prenatal alcohol exposure on cognitive and brain maturation throughout development, because we know it affects, it causes birth defects and lifelong intellectual disabilities, but it still happens. So that slide can stay or go.
I got it.
Okay. So,
this is Kathy. Can I make one comment?
Absolutely.
In terms of using these for the general public, I think one of the things that people will focus on is the heavy.
Just say prenatal alcohol exposure.
Well, you know, again, I recognize this is a scientific community here, so I just wanted to know how you guys felt about that. Is everyone okay with prenatal alcohol exposure?
I am.
Okay. I am.
Yeah.
I agree with Kathy that if you're talking to media policy folks and you're saying heavy, the first thing they're going to say is, okay, well, what about moderate or light or other?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Okay. Thank you.
You know, instead of saying but it still happens, which we all know, I mean, does it need either need not to be there, or does it need to be elaborated on just a bit to say, but, you know.
Well, I'm not sure that that's my job, do you think? I mean, if it can be here and fit in with the rest of the lines, then that's fine.
Yeah, and NOFAS can modify these as they see fit.
Absolutely.
I just want to give them the idea of what kind of data we have and explain it to them so they can. Sometimes the audience is going to be different, but just so they see what's going on.
So here we're showing that, you know, brain imaging is not currently diagnostic of fetal alcohol spectrum. But we do know for sure that on average the brain is too small. So you can see here, this is the FASD group, and the controls in some regions of the brain are more affected than others. So in this circle here is the corpus callosum, the white matter tract that connects the two hemispheres. The top one is a normal 9-year-old male, and these three all have fetal alcohol syndrome. So you can see qualitatively, you can look at it and see differences, but it's really not specific to fetal alcohol.
Quick point. On the graph itself, for a person who's not used to looking at graphs, it looks like the FASD comes almost as high as the control. And if there were a way to accentuate where the mean is, that they can see that those are really what's different, it would be easier for people to understand how that range is only part of the story.
Could you just show a range, the mean, not the range?
There is a mean in the box, but it's hard to see.
Yeah. Right, I'm just wondering if a bar graph with just a mean instead of the range. I mean, I think for us it's useful, but.
Yeah.
I agree, Sarah.
You'd lose the sight differences, but I don't think that's.
I don't think that would be relevant here.
Yeah.
Would there be a way to also be able to say that, in looking at the mean, that the intracranial volume is X percent less in the FASD group? I mean, that's something that would be quick, easy to understand for somebody who is being presented with information that the brain is different.
Well,
I think if you had a bar graph, right on the bar graph, you could just, you know, put in there what the intracranial volume is, and that doesn't really matter. But and then say, you know, FASD brains are been smaller on average.
So I don't even need a graph.
No, that's right. I think the graph ought to go. If this is for the general public, you don't need a graph. What they, I mean, it's clear that the brain is smaller, and that is what you, that's the point you're trying to make to the general public.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think that in the word diagnostic of FASD is just going to confuse them, you know.
I think I don't know. I mean, I'm happy to be wrong, but I think a simple bar graph that then has also a text box that says, but the simple bar graph that shows the mean and then a text box that just says the FAS brain is 23% smaller or whatever it is than the non, whatever you want to call it, the non-exposed brain.
I agree. I think a visual with a simple bar graph is going to make story clear.
We'll do that. All right. Next.
Yeah, can I just ask a quick question just for clarification before we move on? When we say that on average the FASD brains are smaller, does that mean all FASDs? Are we including all
of
the?
Yes.
So that is true. Okay. I just wanted to clarify in case somebody were to ask, so someone with ARND or FAS, we would assume that their brain would be smaller.
Yes, on average. But you can see from the little dots that not, you know, it's not like every kid with FAS has a smaller brain than every kid without FASD.
Right. So it doesn't matter whether it's whether they have the face or not.
No, but the kids with the face tend to be more affected than without. And in the next two slides, I might be able to illustrate that.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify and make sure we had it right.
Elizabeth, before you go on.
Uh-huh.
On the right-hand side, I feel like you can make the point just with the images on the left column, and maybe you can make them bigger,
right,
and maybe use just three or four, maybe all four of them, but arranged a little better and use the word normal or unaffected or affected or
exposed.
Kind of use,
exposed, yeah.
You know, exposed or normal. But it seems like the two columns, the second and third column, although I can see that they illustrate something, I'd rather see some bigger images and keep it less cluttered looking, perhaps. Yeah. Just a thought.
Okay. So some parts of the brain are more affected than others. While the overall size of the brain is reduced, some regions of the cortex are too large, and you can see those in the circles on this image.
I don't know what that's. Kathy, do you think you could present that?
Ooh. No.
No, that's a little it's a little confusing. I'm looking at it here.
Well, I think after the last slide, lay public would be, wait a minute, you just told me they're smaller. Now you're telling me they're larger. So
well, it's part of the story that explains why this work is important.
It is, but sometimes you may just want to pick a couple, this is Tatiana, you may just want to pick a couple themes, just a few key points, and if there's nuances, it just may be.
Yeah, I mean, so try to rethink it, and then, I mean, you know, they can have the slide, and then they can decide, Tom and Kathy can decide whether or not they could feel comfortable presenting it. And depending on the audience.
Ed, remember that slide you used to use with the brains and the area in red that you would show that area was too large?
Right.
Another one? That one was a little easier, I think, than this one, just in terms of it was real simple to look at it and get a quick visual.
One of the problems here is the sites. I mean, because you're looking at too many different things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only issue.
I think it's the same as the last one. I think the site information is, for this audience, not relevant. I agree, Elizabeth, that it's important for the whole CFAS story, but maybe not in this particular presentation.
All right. So that needs to be...
I've got that slide you're talking about, Kathy, and that can be put in easily.
Yeah, I think that one's just a little simpler to see.
That's the thick cortex slide, Elizabeth.
Yes, from the SPM paper from many years ago.
Yeah.
White matter and increase of grade.
We got to move on, and we're getting too far into this. So.
Okay.
Think this one, Elizabeth, all right?
Right. So, do you want me to continue?
Yeah, please.
So the face is a window into the brain. Not all children with FASDs have the face, but the brain is still affected by prenatal alcohol exposure, even in kids with, quote, normal faces. So, you know, we're going to have these same problems again with these graphs, but essentially it shows that the more dysmorphic your face is, like the five here on this lipometer code, the smaller the volume of these regions in the middle of the brain.
Then I'd get rid of the sight data, maybe put in the means, you know, maybe only just show two areas. I don't know.
Okay.
I would also steer clear from using normal faces. I would try to do unaffected or typical or...
Well, I already say... Not all children have the face, but the brain is still affected. So I can even just get rid of that.
Yeah.
I think I have a question. Ed, you'll remember that you've had problems using that lipometer cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering if that is something that might be a problem in this.
We could ask Susan if we can use hers. All right, I'll do that. If not, she will write 15 articles about...
Well, we'll have to pay her.
No, we don't.
Oh, okay.
Moving along.
Okay.
All right.
So here's the other, another illustration that the smaller the eye opening on the left side of the graph here, the smaller the corpus callosum. So it's two ways of illustrating that. The worse the face, the worse the brain. But it's a continuum. It's not FAS versus... I'm just trying to say that it's a continuum. So it's not all or not, all or none. Does that make sense to the people who might present it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if anyone will know what that shape is in the middle of the slide.
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah.
I said, shown here, the corpus callosum.
That's true, yeah.
That's not all or none.
You're the ones who are... going to have to try to explain this.
Need a slide.
The text is very clear. I'm looking at the graph and making sure. I can't really see the ones on the right clear enough.
Yeah, they don't pop out at you, that's for sure. And the text is kind of small above them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if we could somehow simplify that. You know, maybe one... Just one illustration of, here's an example, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I think they're really important brain data, and I think we just have to concentrate on which ones are best to present because, you know, I'm not sure you want to present. They have to go in with your normal presentations, and, you know, so you're going to have to pick and choose a few points to make.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the face is a window into the brain, and it's a continuum, and it's not only the kids with the full face that have abnormalities in their brain.
And I think we need to pick a slide that illustrates that, you know, so it's kind of one really clear, distinct thing to make that point.
Well, I'm open to suggestions on how to do that. I mean...
The last slide does, and I think that...
this one?
Yeah, but I try to make it simpler. So, you know, show as an example, the thalamus is related to the lipometer score. So the more, more the flat, and then just show this is true in other brain areas as well.
The size of regions, you're pointing to some regions. The size of these regions is related to the abnormal lip or something like that.
Yeah, that would be good.
Real simple.
Yes.
So, get rid of the site, should you get rid of the four graphs, should you put one graph on, or you know, that best illustrates that point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on.
So just get rid of this one.
Oh, you, but you need to say what is a corpus callosum. So you'd either need another slide to say the corpus callosum is important, that's why we care, because of the...
Well, we may not pick that structure, so we don't.
So Jeff sent this slide. It just... pretty pictures.
This is from Jeff Wozniak, and I think that shows, go back to that, it's not really popping out on me on my screen, but it's probably because it's not in presentation mode, but it really clearly shows how the corpus callosum, which is that major fiber tract, really can be affected.
Looks like somehow the arrows got moved. I can fix that, but the arrows are pointing at the corpus callosum and the cerebellum. And the slide is just showing that these are two 12-year-old boys, so it's a little bit of a case study, if you will.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think I've seen this image presented, and it really does come out and say, wow. You know, so that one I'd like to keep. And I think it's easily explainable, so.
I agree.
I wouldn't even attempt this slide.
Ooh.
Not that it's not important, but I...
The reason it's important is because it shows it's not just prenatal alcohol exposure. We know when the damage happened, right? But this illustrates that throughout childhood and adolescence, things are changing dynamically, and they're changing differently in these kids.
Right.
And this is what tells us that there may be some hope to alter the environment to help improve these kids' lives.
Right, and I think that can be said, but I think the slide's too complicated. But for the type of audience that NOFAS is going to be talking to.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
To illustrate that with one graph, or one brain slide, or a couple of them, just to simplify this presentation. Because right now, someone's going to have to explain what all those areas are, what all those lines are, what the FDS and the control lines are. And so I think with that text, it says this indicates that the brain is quickly changing.
How about something like prenatal alcohol changes the course of development throughout childhood?
But I think the thing with Elizabeth's slides is that basically they have to be simplified a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think sixth grade.
If there's a way to somehow consolidate.
Well, you know, really, if you want it that simple, why don't we just go back? Because these sagittal images show pretty clearly, you know, just visually looking at the brain, that something's different about it. Simplify this. I mean, I think the rest of the story, I mean, it's just about the brain and the face.
But Elizabeth, I think that we agree that what's important about your data are that it's showing that the changes in the brain are related to the face, and that the change and that those changes vary over time. And I think those two points should be part of the message, but in this complexity, it's hard to see.
I couldn't have said it better, John. It's very important to present this, Elizabeth, but I'm not sure that the...
Maybe we don't need real data to illustrate these things.
No, you need the real data.
No, my point being, I mean, I can just show, like on this slide, I can make one graph with only the lines on it with age and volume, not all the individual data points.
I think
and draw arrows to, you know, one or two of them showing how it's really different. The developmental trajectory is really different.
Yeah, I agree. And pick one of them. It doesn't have to be two.
Right. And you know, for this stuff, I mean, you know, I can just draw a bar graph estimating the mean from the real data.
Right. I think all they need to do is, you're telling a nice story, but it's
what,
too
pardon me?
You're telling a nice story, but it's too complicated, the way it's presented. So you need to tell the same story, but in a much simplified manner. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, great. Let's move on. And if your last slide's like your conclusion slide.
Oh, yeah. So the take-home is the brain is malleable during development. It's contingent to some extent on the environment and may be changeable through intervention.
Great.
Yes, that's great.
All right, who's up next?
Go. Okay.
Bill, give it to Sarah.
Okay, so, all right, so you don't need this slide. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Everyone? Okay, so the main question that we've had using, that we've been trying to address over the last several years using the CFAS projects is how well can we identify FASD? And this stuff you probably don't need because you already have in some other part of your presentation, but the main point is that not every child who's exposed to prenatal alcohol exposure has the facial features of fetal alcohol syndrome. So our goal is to identify which features can be used to identify children who don't have FAS, but who have been affected by alcohol exposure. Comments?
How about changing your first bullet to 2/3 of children born to alcoholic mothers do not demonstrate the classical facial features of FAS.
Okay.
I don't know.
So taking the 10 to 40% and 60 to 90% and just talk about.
I found the two sets of percentages just confusing. I didn't know which one I was supposed to pay attention to.
Okay. Okay.
Kathy, that's all right.
Yeah, it's great. It's great information. Yeah. It's good.
Okay. All right, so what we've done is we've used a combination of different types of data that we've collected that multiple CFAS projects have contributed, including neuropsychological data, 3D facial imaging data, dysmorphology data. So what we've done is we've looked only at children who've been exposed to alcohol but who don't have the facial features of fetal alcohol syndrome, and we've tried to determine if we can accurately distinguish them from children who have not been exposed to alcohol. So that would be our alcohol exposed group and our control group. I think the picture is similar across these three bars, so you could really just talk about this one. These are how well can we accurately classify these non-dysmorphic children using these methods. Sorry. And the reason, so we have here our more dysmorphologically based measures, and the classification accuracy is around 60 to 65%. It's lower than with our neuropsychological data, and the reason for that is that these are non-dysmorphic children. So using these more traditional dysmorphology measures, the accuracy levels are lower than we would hope. Yes?
Do you have notes?
I have notes, yeah.
C- Hold on.
Can you see it now?
Yeah.
Okay. So the neuropsychological data has about 85% accuracy. When we combine them, we can accurately classify over 90% of kids who were exposed to alcohol. And I just can't emphasize enough that these are not kids with FAS. These are exposed children who don't meet the criteria for fetal alcohol syndrome. So those are the kids that we've really been trying to identify, and we can do that with 90% accuracy using the combination of these types of data.
I think it might be important to know the children's ages, the age groups that you looked at.
Yeah.
Would it be easier if, rather than talk about, and I don't know the answer to this, so rather than talk about these non-dysmorphic, the ones without FAS, is if we talked about them as having AR&D?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking Kathy.
Okay.
It might be a good way to move towards that, to get people more familiar with what we mean when we talk about AR&D.
All right, so
like the title could be, instead of identify FASD, should be identify AR&D. My only concern is that AR&D is a neurobehaviorally based, so it makes sense. I don't know.
We can think about that. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But, yeah, you could call them. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. All right, any other comments on that?
Yeah, just I think you're correct that you could do with just the one set of
this
bars.
One. Okay.
3D should be, and dysmorphia should be more clear. There's two different ways of looking at the face.
Mm-hmm.
And neuro, you might say neurobehavioral, because that just – you.
Okay, I'll have more room if I take
that. They're going to think you're talking about brain.
Yep, if I take those bars, if I take those second and third sets of bars, I'll have more room. Yep.
And then a very small point, which is your 3D and neuro bars look almost the same color. You should just change the color of one of them.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay. Anything else? Okay, great. All right, so then our next question is, are the neurobehavioral features that we have identified, are they specific to FASD? Because one of the issues is that there's great overlap between FASD and other disorders, and we believe that this classification or diagnosis represents a unique set of characteristics, and we want to show that. One of the things that we see very commonly in kids with FASD is attention deficit disorder, so one of our strategies has been to compare them to kids with ADHD. And you can see here that when we use the same neuropsychological measures that we used in the previous slide, we can accurately identify or classify over 70% of alcohol-exposed children when the comparison group is ADHD. That's over here. Sorry. So the point here is that this seems lower than the previous slide, and it is. And the important point is that there is a big overlap between kids with FASD and kids with ADHD. But we can still
we can still
use these measures to accurately classify them.
The incongruency between the two slides is very obvious. You go from 90% to 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to create problems. So
you mean on this left-hand bar?
Yes.
Or, well, what if I just show this one, the ADHD one?
Yeah, that may be, and then I'm not even sure you need to show a graph because you only have one bar. So there's nothing there to say it.
True.
All right.
I would not ask a question. I would assert that neurobehavioral features are FASD-specific.
Okay.
Since you're doing that in your other slides, it's really effective.
Okay. So not a question, a statement.
An assertion, yeah.
Yep. So now I think my personal feeling is that having a graph or a visual is really helpful than just a bunch of words. So does anyone have an idea about, is there something else I could do? Ed's right, you know, just one bar is not that interesting, but could I don't know.
Think
any other
about
ideas?
It. We have to kind of move on. So.
Okay, I just have two more slides.
All right.
Okay, so in this, in the interest of trying to distinguish kids with FASD from kids who don't have prenatal alcohol exposure but also have ADHD, we've looked at two different types of information. Behavioral measures, which are primarily parent reports of behavior, and also neuropsychological measures, which are administered directly to the child. They're more cognitive-based. And we see two different types of outcomes. When we use these behavioral measures or parent-based measures, it's very clear that kids who have alcohol exposure and ADHD are more affected than those who don't have ADHD. So there seems to be this increase of effect when you have this sort of double whammy. When you have FASD and ADHD, you do worse than when you just have alcohol exposure and not ADHD. Okay? But when we, I'll come back to this for comments, but it kind of flows with the next slide. But when we look at neuropsychological measures or cognitive measures, we don't see that same pattern, and it appears that regardless of whether you have ADHD, alcohol-exposed kids show this a similar pattern of performance. So alcohol exposure with ADHD is the same as alcohol exposure without ADHD, and in some cases they do worse than ADHD, and in some cases they perform similarly. Okay, so that's all I have, and I'll go back to this one for comments, and I'm assuming some of the comments will be the same.
Kathy, I want to know whether you feel that these are also too complicated and that the audience would better or take in information about the types of specific behavioral problems they have. And I don't know. I'm just asking your opinion. I mean, do you think that you could present this in a way that makes sense?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it's really important. It's the issues that get brought up, as you know, over and over again, you know, by almost every audience. I'm just looking at these and trying to think about an easier way to present it. So I'd have to give it some thought. The information, though, is definitely important, and, you know, we need to get it across. I'm not sure if it looks too complicated and thinking about the easiest way to articulate it in a quick way.
Would it be helpful if you could add notes?
Hold on, there's too many people talking at the same time.
Yeah.
Sarah, if you could add some notes and think about it in ways that you could simplify it, and then we can send, these will all be in a Dropbox, and Kathy can get them, and then she'll have them that she can look at to do it, improve it. Then we can get that.
I mean, I think with the text it works. I mean, but I'd have to have the text there. I think then it works.
I originally had this on one slide with just text, and I tried to figure out a way to animate it, and I couldn't. But some people might be able to. But maybe the graphs. Is it the graphs that makes it too complicated? Could I
have
two columns of text? Like behavioral measures on the left side and neuropsychological measures on the right. I mean, they sort of are the summary bullet points.
Yeah. Well, I think the graph.
I can make that slide, and you can decide if you want it.
Okay. All right.
I think it needs some thought, and so we can do that in the future. So, all right.
One last suggestion,
yes.
Sarah. Would it be helpful to Kathy if there was just a couple of very explicit examples of the kind of behavioral problems itemized somewhere there to that maybe a public audience might be able to more directly relate to?
Yeah, I agree.
That's a thought.
Available.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
The general FAS slides are going to be made available, but these were for people to present their research out of CFAS.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll need.
I just wondered if it would help it stick with some audiences, if they could think about that when they go home. So,
okay. All right. Let me tell you, this whole presentation is on a grad school level. It needs to come down. I mean, I present all the time, and this is not going to get it, not for the legislature or for persons at the state level. So we need a couple of versions of the public presentations.
I think that's a good point. I mean, there are many different audiences that NOFAS does and will be presenting to. You know, I know some of the policy audiences, you know, it's good to have these graphs and even elements that are complicated, visually are complicated, but if there's then something on there that sums it up and the person can take away something, you know, very quickly that's succinct, you know, like the title, then I think that works well. People feel like, I'm getting all of the, you know, the complex stuff, but and I can interpret it. So there's some audiences that I know that I speak with where that is very good. So that's why I like having, you know, the graphs and the other information. I also love, this is a very small point maybe, but I like having where it says San Diego State University there in the bottom. And when you're talking to legislators, I mean, you sometimes those presentations are targeted to a small number of people. And, you know, it may be you're all, you know, you may be constituents of those folks. And so I like to have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, that's all I have.
All right. Anyone want to go next?
Can I go next? Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. Peter, you're on.
Are we going to go past 2 o'clock? Can I just ask that?
I have to leave in 5 minutes. This is.
Yeah, I do too. I just wanted to say that before Peter started.
It's only 11 here, so you've got 3 hours.
I'll be leaving at 2 also to chair a meeting.
Okay. Go ahead, I just wanted people to know we were going to get some of us had to get off. Okay.
I just preface my remarks by saying that Tatiana also has some slides, but I don't think she's going to present them tonight. Is that right?
That's right. I figured 2 of us was too much, so I figured I'd go in the next round.
Okay.
And I think yours are the much more interesting for them, I think.
Okay. I'll have to go into presentation mode. So I've really tried to focus on the ways we've been moving from just doing measurements to looking at the full surface of the face and the shape of the face. And I'm using one child to begin with, looking at the 3D surface of the child's face, and then showing ways to detect the face shape differences in this child. Now, this child has a diagnosis of fetal alcohol syndrome, so it does have the classic facial features. Now, by coloring the face green, where this child is very much like the average of age and sex matched controls, we get green on large parts of the face, and then coloring it red where the face is smaller and blue where it's larger, we can identify very in a lot of detail whether this child's face shape is different. So, for instance, we've got quite a bit of green where this child's coinciding with the average of a matched group of unaffected children. But we can see a red patch on the nose showing where it's smaller. We can see a red patch on the bridge of the nose showing where it's flatter. We can see quite a lot of red on the sides of the face indicating that this child's face is smaller, quite a lot smaller, which is often an effect in fetal alcohol syndrome.
Just a quick suggestion. You're using the words smaller and larger. Why don't you change the code to say red, smaller, blue, larger?
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. I won't do that now because it's embedded in the graphic. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Now, the blue on the lip is indicating where, for instance, in the groove in the middle of the upper lip, the lip is expanded and then is smoother. And, in fact, you can see that on the left to some extent. But all of these features are best seen by an animation. Now, I don't know whether the bandwidth's enough for you to see
that.
Is it animating?
Yes.
Is it jerking or is it just going through smoothly?
Pretty smooth.
No, it's going smoothly.
Okay. So what we're doing here is animating from the child at the FAS end. So when the blue square is left, it's showing the child who we started with. And when it goes to the right, it's morphing, changing shape to the average of this matched group of children who are unaffected.
Peter, let me make a suggestion before I go. I think that what's inherently confusing about this slide is that there are faces overlying the labeling FAS and control. It might be better to have two videos, one of them showing the front view and one of them showing the side view, so that that source of confusion is removed.
Okay, yeah. Now, other people have commented on that. Sometimes I have one vertically above the other. Yeah, I agree with you. So you're thinking that the left picture is FAS and the right picture is control.
Correct. And it's an amazing graphic. It would be a shame to have people confused by it. So it might be that you'd want two movies, in adjacent squares with the words FAS control over the black bar.
Yeah. Okay.
Or possibly use just the one illustration, but get away from your sliding bar and have the word control come and go and complementary the FAS come and go, so that right. You're jumping from one label to the other.
Yeah.
That may be a simpler way to, because the sliding black square is a little bit distracting anyways.
Yeah. It's very hard to have something fade between FAS and control in text.
Okay.
But, yeah, I'll think about that.
Have you thought about redoing your title to Face Shape Can Distinguish FAS from Unaffected Children, or Face Shape Can Identify FAS in Children, to make it more assertive?
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing that I imagine would be in Tatiana's slide. So I somehow imagine this would come after she'd done, something on the more classic view of FAS.
All right.
So what the animation is emphasizing is the smoothing of the upper lip, which you can you see my cursor moving?
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to point to it. So you can see that the groove in the upper lip smoothing out. You can see the mid-face flattening. You can see the nose shortening, the flattening of the nasal bridge. And you can also see this effect on the lower jaw, which is much smaller, as is often the case in fetal alcohol syndrome. Now, this slide is maybe perhaps too complicated, but the idea is to show how you can color lots of different children's faces. And the idea of the slide is to say that at the top, in the top line, these are children who've got a diagnosis of fetal alcohol syndrome, but in the bottom line, you've got the children that Sarah was talking about, children who haven't got the classic features, but they do have some facial dysmorphology, which is what we're trying to detect. And the thing that the children at the top with the FAS diagnosis have most in common is this lots of red on their faces, showing their big reduction in their growth of their faces, whereas at the bottom here, you have less red. In fact, some of them are blue, showing that actually those parts of their faces is bigger than unaffected children. For instance, this last face down here on the bottom right is mainly green, saying that this child actually is very much like an average unaffected child of a similar age and sex. But there's a big piece of red in the middle of the face, showing that the middle of the face is not grown outward as much as it should have done. And by animating individual children in the same way as we started with the child with FAS, these children who don't have the classic features can be shown to have a facial dysmorphology that is suggesting that the prenatal alcohol exposure is affecting the growth of their faces. And you'll see that these children, for example, this one on the left here, doesn't have a thin upper lip, but you can see the expansion of this groove in the upper lip is getting smoother. This child also has this, what we call this backward rotation of the lower jaw, showing that that's not growing correctly. Also has flatness in the mid-face. And in fact, you can see this flatness in all of these children. Some have a thin upper lip, like this child bottom right. This child also has some expanded distance between the eyes, which is perhaps not a common thing in FAS. So the idea of the slide really is to show, by using these animations, we can home in on differences in children even though they don't have the classic FAS features. And that's it.
On the previous slide, would you consider titling it something like facial analysis can identify subtle features that are difficult for physicians or pediatricians to identify. That's an impactful statement. What you have right now is just a subject title thing, facial effects of, right? So that would be a really impactful statement to have in there, and I think would really help, deliver the message you just talked to us about.
Yeah.
And, Peter, do you have ample notes on this so that familiar with it would be able to present that the way you just did?
Well, there are some notes, but they're not ample, I suppose, as you can see.
Well, between you and Tatiana, could we amplify?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Peter, I've got a quick question, if I may. So on the penultimate slide, would adding a row of all faces, would it see, I was wondering, they just all look different to some degree, but would the controls, they also vary from the average, but would putting them there bring the message home that these other ones really differ?
Yeah. But where would I put them in that sort of set?
The bottom row?
At the very bottom.
Yeah. Right. I'd just be interested to see that, and it might help the message.
Jill, what time are we scheduled to end?
4 minutes ago.
Okay. So what I'm going to suggest is that we end shortly, that we revisit this in our next conference call. But before we do, everybody has these slides in a Dropbox folder. And so if people could review them beforehand and then perhaps send suggestions and comments to the originator of the presentation and then to me as well, maybe we could speed up this process of going through them. And people can revise and send those to Jennifer, and then she can put the new ones up, and we'll let people know that a revised PowerPoint's been up. And that way we can, hear people's ideas and people have a chance to think about it before seeing them for the first time. Jennifer sent these out to everybody in a Dropbox a while ago. So does that make sense?
I don't remember receiving it, but I might be mistaken.
Ben?
They're all in the initial Dropbox that Ed set up for the CFAST educational component. They are available there. They're in a single presentation, so I actually had kind of made a common background and made some consistency with them and also put some things in order and included a few of those filler slides that people have kind of mentioned that would be maybe helpful to have. So that's all in that Dropbox that Ed initially sent out to use for this educational component. And I'm not sure, Kathy, if you have that or not.
No, I don't, but that doesn't mean I might have missed that. So I will see if I can figure it out, and if I can't, I'll definitely be in touch for some assistance
Ben,
with that.
Why don't you send out a new an email about it so that people know where it is and a link to it?
Okay.
I'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
That way people can look at these before the next conference call. People can update their slides, and we can put the updated ones in there and go from there. Because we still have four to go through. So that makes sense?
Yep.
Yep.
Any other items that need to be discussed today? All righty. Well, then thank you all very much, and I look forward to talking to you next month, and I'll see some of you in Barcelona. So take care. And any other business, Dale or Bill?
I hope I'm one of the people in Barcelona that you're going to see.
I didn't get my tickets yet, Ed.
Damn.
I just wanted to make a comment about the face-to-face. So we have our travel funds have been kind of unclear. An idea of having it anywhere but NIAAA has been hard for us to get on board with. And we're still kind of in that predicament with a continuing resolution.
I talked to your boss this morning, and we are meeting in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay, yeah, because my next point was that Ken wouldn't be able to make it unless it was here, so that may or may not be a deciding factor in.
Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Jill is doing hotels now.
Okay.
And we're asking the Holiday Inn Express, the Hilton, and the Marriott Conference Center in North Bethesda for rates. So it'll be in one of those three hotels, whoever gives us the best deal.
Should we go ahead and book flights then?
No, I think one of the issues, well, Jill in her email mentioned a three-day meeting. Do people think we need a three-day, or could we end on Tuesday night? Someone emailed me about that.
I would vote for ending on Tuesday night, but that's just me.
Just interrupting, I think you guys, we originally were going to start Tuesday, Wednesday, half-day Thursday, so are you meaning ending Wednesday night?
Whatever. I thought you had sleeping rooms for Monday night for email.
That's a travel day.
All right, so Monday's a travel day, so then the meeting will be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning.
Correct.
All right, so now the question is, do people think we need a three-day meeting, or can we do it in 2 days and finish Wednesday night? And I'm not sure. We don't want people leaving at 1 in the afternoon to go catch their flight home.
Agreed.
So we'll schedule it. I'll think about it and try to put it together, agenda type of thing, and then we'll see where we come out, okay? But reserve those 3 days, but wait a week or two before flights, all right? We'll let you know when everything is handled, okay?
Okay.
All righty then. Thank you all very much, and I'll talk to you soon, and take care.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.